Now we're holding on page 130 in Tainis, Ois Nun. The Mishnah had mentioned that one of the cases where you fast daven is where there's a dever, where there's an epidemic, and the Gemara goes and deals with the details of the Mishnah mentions, and the Gemara goes into more detail of how many people have to pass away from it for it to be considered a dever. I remember at the beginning of COVID, people were wondering whether the death rate then was enough, but it turns out that not, based on the figures that the Gemara says, no, it was orders of magnitude less than that, Baruch Hashem. Anyway, so the Gemara in that connection mentions a discussion between Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak on that subject. So now that leads the Gemara into the following story. Omele Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista le Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Leikum mar leisiv legabon. Rebbe, you, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, should come and move and stay together with us. Meaning, in other words, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was living in a place where the people were not so important and where they didn't know to respect the great Talmud Chacham. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was among them. So his namesake, Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista, offers, "Why don't you come and move to my town?" Omalei, so he answers, "I don't need to." Tanena, we learn in a brisa. It's not a person's place that honors him. It's not that a person lives in a distinguished place, and from that he gains honor. A person brings honor to his place. So in other words, let me stay where I am, and eventually I'll raise up the level of the people over there. There's a piskum and hayom yom on this Gemara that explains the word mechabed has a double meaning. The word kovod is the shodesh means kovod, a liver, like kovod le para, yeah? And it also, which means that a person is weighted down with gashmius, and then it means kovod as in bringing ruchnius into a place. So a person shouldn't be weighed down and dragged down by the kind of place that he is. Elohu mechabed es mekoymer, rather a person has a responsibility where he is to bring a gilui alakos, to bring a kovod down into there. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying, in the same vein, then, there's no reason for me to move to your town. Let me stay where I am, and I'll work on making a sviva over there. Shouldn't be for himself. He should be working on them, yeah. Also, that he, yeah, so there's that too, yeah. Shekein motzinu b'sinai. And we find an example of that with Har Sinai. Shekolzman shashchina shruya olav. As long as the shchina was resting on Har Sinai, before and during and after Matan Torah, the Omra Torah, Gamatzoin v'habokor al yiru al mula harahu. The pasuk says that even the sheep and the cattle should not graze on that mountain because it still has kedusha. Mistauka shchina, but then once the shchina goes away from it, Omra Torah. Then the Torah says by Matan Torah, v'mshoy chayovol, when the shofar gives a long blast, hema yalu v'har, then they can go up on the mountain. Anybody can go up. So Rashi points out now the Bimshoy Chayovol is referring to it was told at the time of the Luchos Rishonis. The Gamatzoin v'Habokar Al Yiru is at the time when Hashem is telling Moshe to come up to Har Sinai for the Luchos Shnius. So Rashi explains over here, and also in Beitza, because this Gemara is also mentioned in Masech the Beitza in a different context, that Rashi learns the Shechina remained continuously on Har Sinai from Matan Torah, or from shortly before Matan Torah until they left there, as we have in Parshas Baaloscha, they left there on Chof Ir, and the entire time the Shechina was on them. So therefore, when the pasuk says "B'mishoy Chayovel Hema Yalu Bahar," it's sort of a preview. It's saying not that that's going to happen now, but eventually there's going to be "B'mishoy Chayovel," and at that point, once everybody's leaving there, then Har Sinai becomes an ordinary place, and anybody can go up. Can anybody go up there? Anybody can go up there, and even the animals can go up there. So Rashi points out, because after all, you have that it's true once the Mishkan. So actually, Rashi says over here that the Shechina left Har Sinai actually not when they left Har Sinai, but rather when the Mishkan was set up. When the Mishkan was set up on Aleph Nissan, then at that point the Shechina moved from Har Sinai and took up its position on the Kaporis. So then that Bimshur Chayovel would refer to that. In Beitza, Rashi seems to say that it's actually until they left there a month and a half later, on Chof Ir. Tosfos actually there discusses at some length and says maybe not necessarily. They have various questions on Rashi, and they say that no, it may mean that indeed not long after Matan Torah is when the Shechina is there during the 40 days that Moshe is learning the Torah from Hashem. After that, it will have left. Or at most, after Moshe received the Luchos Shnius, because after all, the Pasuk Gamatzon V'Habokor is referring to that, And therefore, so you don't have to say that it was still there a year, that it was still there almost a year after Matan Torah. Maharsho also adds the point, why are we focusing on the Gamatzon v'Habokor al Yiru? Why not mention the beginning of the pasuk, the Ish lo yale imach, that nobody is allowed to go up with you on Har Sinai? So one point is, so Maharsho says, one point is because based on what Tosfos is saying, that you would think, you could misunderstand. It's not a statement that you're allowed to, but rather a statement that there's a mitzvah to go up there at that point. Therefore, the Gemara prefers to bring the pasuk over here involving the animals, because obviously there's no mitzvah for the animals to go up there. It just means they're allowed to. So that makes it clear that we're not talking about a mitzvah, just something that they're allowed to. Rashi and Tosfos all refer to the point the Gemara mentions in Beitza. From this, we learn the concept, Dabar Shema Minyan, Sorech Minyan Acher La'atira. When you have something that was asked by a Beis Din, even though the reason no longer applies, you still need Beis Din, you still need that Beis Din or another Beis Din, as the case may be, to explicitly say that now it's mutter. Because you would say over here, the whole reason nobody can go up on Har Sinai is because the Shekhinah is there. You would think once the Shekhinah goes away, automatically you're allowed to go up there. Nevertheless, Hashem has to stress that no, only when there's a blast of a shofar indicating that now it's allowed to, then you're allowed to go up. Anyway, the point is, Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchok is saying to Reb Nachman Bar Chisda, the point is, you see, it's not that Har Sinai had intrinsic Kedusha. It had Kedusha only as long as the Shekhinah was there. As soon as the Shekhinah is left, it becomes like any other random place in the desert. The same way. So we see from that a person gives honor to their place. Just like I said, the same way, I'm giving honor to my place. I don't need to move from there. And he continues, V'chein matzinu b'oil moed. We find the same thing when it comes to b'oil moed shema midbar. We find the same thing with the Mishkan in the desert. As long as the oil moed is set up, then the pasuk tells us all the mitzaroyim, all the zovim have to stay out of the various machnas. You have the various numbers of machnas that each one has to stay out of. But once they roll up the parochas and start taking apart the mishkan, miyad hutru zovim mitzaroyim lekanestram, then right away zovim and mitzaroyim are allowed to go into that same place that only a few minutes earlier had been the space of the mishkan or even the kodesh kedoshim. So we see again the idea is that it's not that a place has a certain intrinsic chivus, it depends on the tzaddik living there. Omalei, so Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista tells him, Ihochi, if so, so you don't want to move from your town, Ekumanov, Ezel Gabi Demar. So let me go and move from my town to your town. Fine, you stay where you are, and I'll come and move to your town. And that way, maybe that way, when there's two Tamar Chachamim there, then people will have more Derech Eretz for you. Together, we can have more of an effect on the city. Omalei, but Rav Nachman Yitzchok tells him, you don't. It's not right that you should do that. Mutav sheyovei mona ben pras, it's a mona ben mona. It's more appropriate, it's better that a mona, the son of a pras, a mona is a like we have in morning davening, mona b'shachar, so a pras b'shachar, shlosh meis v'shishim u'shmona, monim hoyuba, mona b'choyen, pras b'shachar, so pras ben habayim. A pras is a half a mona. A mona is the weight of 100 zuz, and a pras is half that. So a mona ben pras means somebody who himself is great, but he's the son of somebody who's not quite of that caliber. Rav Nachman Yitzchok is referring to himself. You notice that his father is just called Yitzchok, not Reb Yitzchok, which implies, I'm sure his father was an Erel Chayid, otherwise he wouldn't be mentioned in connection with his son, but nevertheless, a Talmid Chacham, he wasn't, or at least not of the kind that would be called Rav Yitzchok. So it's appropriate that the mona ben pras, which is to say me, should come. It's a mona ben mona to the one who's a mona, the son of a mona, meaning you, Rav Nachman, bar Rav Chista, where your father was an outstanding Talmud Chacham, and so are you. So you're like a mona, the son of a mona. Bar Yovi, mona ben mona. It's a mona ben pras. It's not really appropriate that the mona ben mona, you who are a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, should move to live together with the mona ben pras. So it's better, in other words, Rav Nachman Yitzchok tells him that we each stay in all respective places. The Gemara continues talking about this matter of Deber. The Gemara says, "Besura habas devarta." One time in the city of Sura, there was an epidemic. V'shivavuse de Rav loy habas devarta. But in Rav's neighborhood, there was no epidemic. Sovrumine, mishum deschose de Rav the nafish. They figured Rav lives in this neighborhood. Must be because of his schus. Ischazi lahu bechelma. But they, whoever it was that were thinking that, right, was shown in a dream. No, Rav Nefishes Chusei Tuba. Rav's Chusim are far greater than that. V'ham Milsa Zutra Hila Rav. This would be a minor thing on the level that Rav is on. Such a thing that his neighborhood should be spared from an epidemic is a small thing. So rather, it's going to be somebody else's schus that the Gemara is going to explain. Now, so what? Okay, yesh b'chlam monim, yesh b'chlam masayim monim. If Rav's schusim are greater than that, why shouldn't it include that his neighborhood is saved from Gever? So Marsha says, because first of all, the dream, the Bala Chaloimus who told them this dream, wanted to make them aware of a hidden tzaddik among them, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, somebody who had a special schus. In other words, maybe the idea is if they thought it's only because of Rav's schus, they're going to think to themselves, okay, listen, none of us are capable of being like Rav. So like this, they're being shown. Poshe Tegid over there, who has one particular schus, where in his schus, the neighborhood was saved, and people can learn from that. This is a Poshe Tegid. We could do the same kind of thing as well. Another point, Marsha says, after all, if it was because of Rav's schusim, then like we learned before, when a ness is done in the person's schus, then schusim are taken away, are deducted from his credit, lo yamamba. So it wouldn't be right that it would be in the schus of Rav. Ion Yaakov points out another angle on it as well. If it was a result of Rav's schus, then actually what you would have is you'd see the ness would be in a greater way, that actually there would be an epidemic in the neighborhood, but he personally, Rav, would be saved. And then it would show that obviously it was in his own schus. So like this, the fact that it was the whole neighborhood was spared, which seems more like a teva dika thing, so therefore it's not because of Rav. Anaf Yosef brings another related point from Abyonis and Ibishitz that when Hashem makes it, when Hashem saves Rishoyim and the schus of Tzaddikim, the reason is because there was the concern after all that Kivin Shenitnam Rishus the Mashlis Lachabel, then he's not going to notice between the difference between the Tzaddik and the Rosha. So therefore, again, Rav having such great schusim, so therefore that wouldn't be necessary. It would be perfectly reasonable enough for there to be a plague, for there to be an epidemic in his neighborhood, and he personally would be saved because he, being a tzaddik drummer, wouldn't even be subject to that kind of kivin shenitna reshus l'mashlis l'chabel. And therefore, if instead the whole neighborhood had to be spared, then it's not because of Rav; it's rather it had to be because of a different reason. So, what is that reason? There's a certain person in this neighborhood, he lends out a shovel and a spade when people need to bury a mess. So therefore, that there are no mason in his neighborhood, so he doesn't have to be lending out his tools for that purpose. Similarly, the Gemara says, one time in the city of Drukout, there was a fire broke out. In Rav Huna's neighborhood, he lived in that town. The fire did not spread there. So again, they thought it's because of Rav Huna's tremendous schosim, as we learned about yesterday, about his great schosim. Again, they were shown in a dream the people who were thinking that. Rav Huna nefishis schosetuva. Rav Huna's schosim are far greater than that. V'hai zutruhu l'Rav Huna. Relative to Rav Huna's level of schos, this would be a small thing that his neighborhood should be saved. Elam shumahi itza. Rather, it's because of a certain woman in the neighborhood. D'machamim atanurim. Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. Every Erev Shabbos, she would fire up her oven. Or m'shayla v'shibavuse. And then lend out the fired up oven, the heated up oven, to her neighbors, her poor neighbors who can't afford firewood for their ovens. So she would offer them her oven, which was heated up, in order for them to bake their bread and then prepare their food. Lekavod Shabbos, and in the schus of that fire that she worked on and then made available for her neighbors, in the schus of that, there was no fire in the neighborhood. So that's the thing. Now the point is, other people should learn from that, right? Right, but that's the point. That schus of Gemilas Chasadim is a tremendous thing, but still it doesn't come to Rav Huna's schus. And we learned yesterday about Rav Huna. We talked about his Gemilas Chasadim as well. He had much greater Gemilas Chasadim. But for her, this is, on her level, this is a very great thing to do. And therefore, in the schus of that, her neighborhood was saved from the fire. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Now, there are various other kinds of disasters that it mentions in the Mishnah that could happen, Rahman al-Tlan, for which you have to fast and daven, and you have different cases. Sometimes just the local area has to fast, sometimes even much wider areas. So the Gemara tells, Omer le Rabbi Yehuda, also kamsi, that one of them is when there are locusts. So that one time they told Rabbi Yehuda that there are locusts invading the area. Gozer tanisa, so he immediately declared a fast. Omrulay, they told him, Loikomapsidon, and maybe it's not such a big deal. The locusts are not actually destroying anything. They're here, but they, you know, like you have, you know, having the news all the time, you know, these 17 and 13 and whatever year cicadas that they have one summer and another. And yeah, so they're not a problem. But Rabbi Huda tells him, no, what do you think? Zvoda Aisu Bahadayu. Do you think they brought provisions with them? Sooner or later, right now, maybe they're full, so they're not destroying anything. Soon enough, they're gonna start eating all the vegetation because they're not gonna have any food otherwise. So therefore, yes, we have to be proactive. As soon as we see them, we have to start fasting and davening for Hashem to get rid of them. Similarly, Omer the Shmuel, Ikamoy Sana Bechoizoi. They one time told Shmuel that there was an epidemic going on in Bechoizoi. It was an area in the kingdom of Babel, but it was a considerable distance from the main area of Jewish settlement in Babel. If you look on a map, you have the main area where Jews lived in Babel in those times. It is what's nowadays basically central and southern Iraq. Bechoizoi, meanwhile, is in southwestern Iran. They're not that far apart from each other relatively, but there's a good couple hundred miles between. We find that some places in the Gemara, it mentions that it would take sometimes as much as 6 months to travel from one to the other, so it's far. Gozer Tanisa, well, Shmuel declared a fast because of that. Omru Lev HaMerachek, so they ask him, isn't it far away? Why are you declaring Mela, the Rabbonim, in Bechizoi, should be declaring a fast for them. Why are we in the main area of Jewish settlement in Bava? Why do we have to fast? Omar, he says, Leka Mabra Hocha Deposik Lei. There's no, it can be understood as a statement or as a rhetorical question. As a statement, it would be lekama barahocha, the posik lay, there's no ferries or rivers or things like that that prevent it from coming, meaning that with an epidemic like that, a disease can easily spread from one place to another. Another way of understanding it is as a rhetorical question isn't there a ferry between there and here? Meaning, in other words, people can go up and take the ferry, and then therefore they can end up spreading the disease from one place to another. So yes, even though it's far away, but nevertheless, there's enough people traveling between here and there that's a concern over here as well. Right? Yeah, like China. Similarly, Omer le Rav Nachman, Ikamay Sona Ba'arad Yisrael. One time they told Rav Nachman that there's an epidemic in Eretz Yisrael. Also Gozer Tanis, so he also declared a fast. Omar, now Eretz Yisrael is a lot further than Bavel than Bechoizoi is from Bavel, and there's not that many people traveling back and forth. So there's not this issue of Mabara, but Omar, he said in Gvir Loika, if the mistress, if the queen, is getting punished, Eretz Yisrael being like the queen relative to all other countries. Marsha points out, we learned in the first parak, for example, Eretz Yisrael gets rain first and then everybody else gets with the leftovers, etc. Shif chole kol shekin, how much more so the maidservant has to be worried that she's in trouble. So if there's something going on in Eretz Yisrael, if the tzaddis going on in Eretz Yisrael, then yes, we in Chutz La'aretz have to be concerned about it as well. And so the Gemara explains that the Sinemaskone is basically that. When you're talking about Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz, it doesn't matter how far it is. Nevertheless, we still have to be concerned and we still have to fast and daven and ask Rachmim from the Edishta on the grounds of what Rav Nachman is saying. When it's talking about two areas in Chutz La'aretz, then it depends basically whether there's regular travel between them, like Bechazoi and Bavel, or whether there's not. Okay. Since we mentioned before about some poshita people and their mice and tovim, so now the Gemara further digresses to talk about some other examples of that kind of thing, seemingly poshita people who accomplished tremendous things. So the Gemara says, Abba Umna, Abba was his name, and Umna means the bloodletter. So that was his profession. So Abba Osile Shlomo Kol Yoima Mimsiv Tadiraki. Umna means a bloodletter. Back then, it was a very common thing. You find all over Shas that people, it was considered to be a healthy thing for a person every so often to go and have blood let, to have extra excess blood removed from your body. The idea was supposed to be that this way it removes toxins from the body, whatever it was exactly, however, whatever the theory behind it was. It was a very common thing. You find all over Shas that people would regularly go in for bloodletting. So this Abba, that was his profession. So Abba Osile Shlomo Kol Yoima Mimisiv Tadirakia. Every day he would receive a Shalom Aleichem from the Mesivta Dirkiya. Baskol every day would announce Shalom Aleichem to Abba Ola Abaya mi Mali Shabsa la Mali Shabsa. Abaya would receive such a greeting from the Mesivta Dirkiya, from the Yeshiva Shamaila, every Friday. Or the Rava mi Mali Yemiti Kippuri la Mali Yemiti Kippuri. Rava would receive such a greeting every Erev Yom Kippur. So Abaya is feeling bad about the comparison with Abba Umna. What can I do to reach the schusim What can I do to reach the schusim of Abba Umna? He's getting a greeting from the Sivta Derekiah every day. That means he must have tremendous schusim, the kina sofrim, taba chokma. This is the good kind of kina. What can I do to reach his level of maisim tov? Maybe they told each other, or maybe Abaya and Rava are certainly on the level to hear, if they had to hear that the Abba Umna is being told Shalom Aleichem. But he was told, you're not going to be able to do like what he does because the Maisim Tovim that he does are in connection with his profession. His profession is as a bloodletter, and the Gemara is going to go on to tell things that he would do specifically in that connection. Your profession is as a Rav and a Rosh Hashiva. So you don't have the capability of doing the same kinds of things that he's doing. What did he do? My uvda da abba umna. First of all, the kihava ovid refuah or milsa. First of all, when he was doing the refuah or milsa, means the thing, which is the Gemara's kind of euphemism for bloodletting. So when he was doing bloodletting, have ovid like duchta the gavri lechudayu or dinoshi lechudayu. First of all, he had separate waiting rooms for the men and for the women. For tznius. Second of all, second of all, when he's having to let blood from women, now on the face of it, the normal way would be they'd roll up their sleeves or whatever, but that's a problem of tznius. So what he did is he had a special kind of gown made that had a kauna attached to it. Kauna literally means a horn, but it's basically like a tube, like a syringe kind of, which they would use for blood. So he had a garment made. He had a hospital gown type thing made that had something like that sewn into it. To have us bazi kikusilta, there was a hole in it. So in that kauna, there was a hole in it large enough for the bloodletting needle to have us asya ipsa. When a woman would come for treatment, malbishla, then he would have her put on this gown, and then that way he can stick the needle in through that kauna, through that syringe or whatever that's sticking out, and that way she doesn't have to roll up her sleeves or bare her shoulder or whatever you'd normally do for bloodletting, and that way there's no issue of sneeze. Kihefid lo the stakol bus, so that way he's not looking at her exposed skin. Another thing, he had a place outside his office. Me'avroi would mean outside. Ditznia would mean a private place, a place where a person can come in, where a person can come in secret. Pretty, where people would put the fee, the prutis that they're paying him for his fee for bloodletting. This way, the is lay romi bay, whoever could afford it would go over there and put the money in. The less lay, have a osi v'yosiv v'lay michsiv. Anybody who doesn't have the money would be able to come in and sit down for treatment, and he's not embarrassed because afterwards Abba Umna doesn't know who's putting in the money and who's not. So this way, he's avoiding that either the poor people are not going to be embarrassed that they can't pay. And they don't have insurance, obviously. Furthermore, when Abba Umna had a patient who was a young Tamid Chacham, he would not even take a fee from him at all. So even if the guy wanted to give him, even if the young Tamid Chacham wanted to give him a fee, he wouldn't take it from him. If he saw a person who couldn't afford it, then he would give him some coins. Instead of taking a fee, he would give him. That's the girsa of Ein Yaakov. The girsa in the printed Gemara is uvasa dekoi. After the young Tamid Chacham would get up, Yohiv Pretty, then Abba Umna would give him some coins. Zil Ivri Nafshach, and tell him now go take these coins and go buy some food with it to refresh yourself. Because after you have bloodletting, just like nowadays when you go and donate blood, they have mezonos and orange juice or whatever. The same way we find in various places in the Gemara, you're supposed to eat and drink something after bloodletting to revive yourself, to re-strengthen yourself. So now if the guy, so either so the two girsois, oh, we have over here is either if the guy couldn't afford it, if Abba Umna saw that the guy is poor and not only can't afford the fee, but can't afford food for after the bloodletting, or the other girsa is that he's a young Tamid Chacham, he wouldn't take a fee from him and he would give him money to go and buy refreshments for himself. So in short, Abaya is being told these are all kinds of things that Abba Umna is doing in connection with his profession. You don't have that kind of job, so therefore you don't have the ability of doing these things. And the Gemara continues, Zimna Choda Shodar Abaya Zuga De Rambon Lemivdeke. So one time Abaya sent two Tamid Chachamim to test out Abba Umna. The Pashtos, after this, after we've been told about Abba Umna's tremendous schusim, so he wanted to test him out and see what kind of caliber of person he is. So they went to his house. He had them sit. He gave them to eat and drink. And he put down woolen blankets to sleep on. Rashi says, "Dustakia tachshite tsemer," so like fancy woven woolen blankets for them to sleep on. Lotsafra in the morning when they left, parchinu, they rolled up the blankets, vaisinu l'shuka, and they took them to the marketplace. Like it almost seems like they're stealing them from him. The next day, Abba Umna finds his expensive quilts are missing. He doesn't raise a hue and cry. He goes to the market, and he finds them standing over there and offering these blankets for sale. On the face of it, what a chutzpah. And they on top of it, they don't apologize or anything. Would you tell us how much these are worth that we can sell? So he tells them this is how much they're worth. Basically, they're testing him to see, is he going to be choshed them as gazlonim, or is he maybe going to undervalue them at least? He's going to say, you know what, at least these are my blankets after all, at least let me quote them a price below after all. They're claiming, they're asking him to tell what the price is, implying that they themselves don't know. So he could, on the face of it, get away with quoting them a lower price and they wouldn't know the difference. So this is all part of the test. So they ask him, I don't know, maybe you're undervaluing it, maybe it's worth more. So he tells them, this is how much I bought them for in the first place. So now they told him the truth. These are in fact your blankets, and we took them from you. So now they said to him, now we ask you, what did you suspect us of? You came in the morning and you saw that your expensive blankets that you'd given us to sleep are gone, and now you come and we're offering them for sale, and we're even trying to charge you more than the price. So what do you think is going on with it? What were you really thinking? Yeah. Malahusi tells them, Amina, I was thinking, maybe you Chachamim had a situation, a Pidyan Shvuyim, that came up. And you were embarrassed to tell me, and therefore you figure you'll do it in this underhanded way to raise money for Pidyon Shvuyim. Now, you're going to ask a Bari Tzedakah should be embarrassed to ask him, isn't that kind of their job? So Ben Yoyada makes a point that he's saying maybe the Pidyon Shvuyim is in your own family. Maybe it's a relative of yours who's in jail or something, and therefore you were embarrassed to, so you're not professional Tzedakah collectors or whatever, and therefore you're embarrassed to do it. So they told him, Hashta Nishkele Mar. Well, as a matter of fact, the fact is we didn't take it for Pidyon Shvuyim. We just took it in order to test you. So now take them back. After all, we only came to test you. He tells him, no, Mar, he shaita. Ever since I thought that you took them for Pidyon Shvuyim, Asachte the Datori Letzdaka, I was Masiach Das, and I figured these blankets ought to go for Tzedaka. So it's tremendously the Fnim Ashura Sadin. So therefore, now we understand why he deserved a greeting from the Yeshiva Shalmaila every day. You're not allowed to take things in order to, yeah, that's true. You're not allowed to steal in order to play a joke on somebody. One answer to that is, that's when you're going to take it and keep it by you for a while in order to harass the guy. A famous story involving the Baal Shem Tov, where a guy sees that his friend leaves money lying around the house. So he figures he's going to take it. And a while later, after the guy's a little nervous, then he'll tell him. And that way the guy will be careful with his money in the future. In the event, he ends up raising a whole hue and cry. They call the police. B'chola, the guy is enmeshed deeper and deeper into it, and he doesn't know what to do. Years later, he meets up with Baal Shem Tov on the road. The Baal Shem Tov stops his wagon, goes over and whispers in his ear, and then the guy is on his way. The Baal Shem Tov's Talmidim think this guy must be one of the Lamed Vov Tzadikim, that the Baal Shem Tov is talking with him personally on the road. So they go chase after him, and he tells them the whole story. B'kitzer, the Baal Shem Tov told him, go tell your friend that I took it all those years ago, and you'll see he won't be angry. You'll see that he'll accept that you were doing it for his benefit. But nevertheless, yeah, that was that kind of thing. We was taking it for a while would be one thing. Here, they're just taking it basically overnight, and they know first thing in the morning he's going to find it. So therefore, maybe it's not an issue of that in the first place. Anyway, so Cholosh died to do, so that explains. So now Abaya was appeased. He realized there's no reason for me to be jealous of Abba Umna's daily greeting from the Yeshiva Shomayla, because yeah, I can't possibly equal what he's doing. Cholosh died to the Rava al Dabaya, but Rava felt bad. What about Abaya? Both of us are Rosh Yeshiva. Why should he get a greeting from the Yeshiva Shomayla every Erev Shabbos, and me only every Erev Yom Kippur? What do I need to do in order to reach his Sfosim? Ischazi le bechelma. Rava was shown in a dream. He was told, "Mistayach, you should consider it enough to come magni schusach hakola krata, that your schus is protecting your entire city. In other words, Pashtus, we would say that by the people in Rava's city were not necessarily acting the way they should, and therefore Rava's chusim, so to speak, needed to be used up in order to save them, and therefore he can't be getting a greeting from the Yeshiva Shalmaila every day. Marsha points out there's another angle in it as well. We find that Abaya was the Rosh Yeshiva, and then after he passed away and Rava took over, so his yeshiva became very much greater. In fact, there's a story in the Gemara, and we learned it at the end of Yoma. It's also in Nedarim that Rav Yosef gave Rava a bracha, Yehei Rava the Tirum Roshach, I call it Kraka. It should be, may it be Hashem's will, that your head is elevated over the entire city. So now Rava felt better. That therefore, in other words, it means that he does have tremendous schus, that his schus is that he's over and protecting the entire city, and therefore he felt better. So fine, my schus is not being used just for me personally to get a greeting from the Yeshiva Shamaila. Instead, it's being used on behalf of the whole city, where I'm a greater Rosh Yeshiva than that. I have a greater reach as Rosh Yeshiva than Abaya did, and therefore that made him feel better. I've never received a greeting from the Yeshiva Shalmaila, so I don't know. Okay, let's go on. Another example of Poshita people who accomplished great things. The Gemara tells, Rabroika from Chozah, this is from Beit Chozori, the place that we mentioned before, have a koi b'shuka de Beit Lefet. One time he was standing in the marketplace of Beit Lefet, the name of a place. Also, Eliyahu came and appeared to him, or different girsa in the printed Gemara, have a shchiach Eliyahu gabe. Eliyahu and Navi would regularly meet up with Reb Broika and tell him things. Omale, so now when Reb Broika is standing there in this marketplace, he asks Eliyahu, mi ika b'hai shuka bar alma da'asi? Is there anybody in this marketplace who is a ben olam abo? So Marsha says, you know, we have the famous expression, ro'isi b'nei aliyah v'hin mu'otim. There are only a very few really high caliber tzaddikim in the world. So he's curious whether any of them are in this particular marketplace right now. What do we mean a ben olam haba? I mean, every year, Ko Yisrael Hashem Chelek olam haba. The point is, many people have to go through various things before they reach their place in Gan Eden. Schibot HaKever and Kafakela and this and that and the other. So ben olam haba means somebody who can go straight to Gan Eden without any of those preliminaries. Anyway. So Goin Yaakov brings over here on the side another explanation as well, that usually most people have an Olam Haba in Olam Haba. They don't usually have a taste of it in this world. So he's asking, is there anybody in this marketplace now who has the ability, who's on the level to have a foretaste of Olam Haba in this world? So Leo tells him right now there's not. Ad hochi v'hochi, as they're talking, Osahu Gavra, a certain person came along and then stepped into that street to have a Messiah Masoni Uchmi. He was wearing black shoes, and in those times, Jews generally did not wear black shoes. Actually, Marsha explains that it might mean that in general, Jews back then would wear black shoes, but they would wear them with white laces or other colored laces. This guy had the shoes and the laces were all black, which was not the Jewish style. And he also did not have tzitzis on his garment. Tchelta is tchelas, because back then they still had tchelas. So he didn't have any tchelas, he didn't have any tzitzis on his clothing. Ben Yoyada points out, now the fact is you're not allowed to wear a four-cornered garment without tzitzis. The guy's not going to be over on that. So fine, what he did is he made one of the corners round, as we know, like people do with the kapotas or whatever, for example, so that it's not actually chayiv in tzitzis. But it wasn't so obvious on the face of it. Back then, you have to keep in mind also people didn't wear a separate beged for tzitzis. The actual piece of clothing themselves that they wore, a person's regular clothing, was a four-cornered garment, sort of like a toga or a talus or something like that, and they would have the tzitzis on it. So this guy doesn't have that. So on the face of it, he doesn't look like a yid. But Eliyahu tells him, "Hi, bar amal de osihu. You should know this guy is a ben olam haba." Also, so Reb Breika called out to the guy, but he didn't come over. Also, the gabe, he didn't come over. Ozel iu abasre. So Reb Breika went over to the guy. Amalei my ovdoch. He asked him, "What do you do?" Amalei, and the guy answers, "Zil he ibn avatolamacher. Leave today. Go away today. I don't have time to talk to you today. Come back tomorrow, and I'll talk to you." Breika must have been very curious. He also when he meets up with him to the next day, he asks him, "So what do you do?" So the guy answers, "Zanduka ana. I'm a warden of the in the royal jail." So what do I do as a warden, as a guard in the jail? First of all, asarna gavru l'chud v'noshi l'chud. I make sure that the Jewish men and women who are in jail over there are kept in separate places. Over Layla, and at night, ramina puya ben gavru l'noshi, I place my bed between the men's and the women's quarters. Ki heichid l'lev do isura. This way they can't cross over without me being aware of it, and this way they don't come to do isurim. Furthermore, he says, when I see a Jewish woman over there where the goyim are eyeing her and who knows what they might do to her, then I'm most in nefesh to save her from what they're plotting. For example, one time in the jail, there was a Jewish girl, a girl within half a year after Bas Mitzvah, within 6 months after Bas Mitzvah, who was Moirosa, which is, it's always considered in the Torah like to be the ultimate, the quintessential example of a married woman. You see, for example, that there you have Skila with regular HSH Skenek, etc. Anyway, the goyim again are eyeing her. They were going to rape her. So I took dregs of wine, the shadori lo b'shipula, and I poured it on the hem of her dress. And I told her she's a nida. And even the goyim obviously don't have a mitzvah of staying away from a nida, but nevertheless they consider it a repulsive thing. So that way they ended up leaving her alone. So these are the kinds of things that he's doing to save Jews who are in jail. So the Broika asked him, my time is Simus Masoni Uchmi, why are you wearing black shoes or black shoes and black laces? So Oma Miss Abelano Yerushalayim. So he says, because I'm mourning for Yerushalayim. There's a story in Baba Kama also about a yid named Elozu Zaira who's walking around with black shoes. And he tells the mourning for Yerushalayim. They actually put him in jail for that. They said, you're acting with Yura, you're acting like a big shot over there, like you should be walking around and saying, I'm mourning for Yerushalayim, until he showed them he's a Talmid Chacham, and then they left him alone. So here he's doing the same kind of thing. But my time, Eloi Romas Chute. So he asked him, why aren't you wearing tzitzis? This is the Girsay in Ein Yaakov. The Girsay in the printed Gemara is just he asked him both, why are you wearing black shoes and not wearing tzitzis, both of which make you look like you're dressing as a goy. So he answers, Del Zilna Beina Ovdi Kachavim, I'm going constantly among the goyim. They can't know that I'm a yid. This way, if there's something secret, if they're plotting in secret against the Jews, or they're about to make a gzera against the Jews, they tell me what's going on because they think I'm one of their guys. And I go and tell the Chachamim, and they dab into the Eibishta for Rachmanos, so if the goyim knew that I was a Jew, they wouldn't take me into their confidence, and I wouldn't be able to accomplish all of that. So he asks him, Reb Roika asks him, my time ki aminoloch ano my uvdoch amritli zilha idna v'tolomocher. Why is it when I asked you what you do, you told me go away today and come back tomorrow? Amalei. So the guy answered, he shy to have a gazri gzerta. Just then, those guys, the goyim, had made a gzera. But amino. So I figured to myself, I don't have time to stand here and chit chat about what I do. Ezel Bereisha ve'eshme, let me first go and hear what exactly they're planning. Ve'eshlach lehu l'rabbanan, and go inform the Chachamim, k'yechid deliver rachmei ala demilsa. This way they can daven about it, v'yivat luna, and v'yivatala. So Rabbi Reiko realized, in other words, that as much as this guy looks like a posh to yid, and not even dressing openly as a yid, nevertheless he has tremendous schosim, and is a ben olam haba. So now he's back in the marketplace over there. Adahochi v'hochi, also treyachrini, as he's standing over there with Anilayo, and Novi is with him, two other people walking. Omalei, and Eliyahu tells him, Hani nami b'nei alma d'osininu. These two people who just came in are also b'nei olam haba. Ozel agabayu, so the breaker goes over to them. Omalei mai ovdaifu, what do you do that's so special? Omalei, they tell him, inshi b'dichi anon. We're very naturally happy people. We're smechem m'samchem b'nei adam. We're naturally happy and we have a talent to make other people happy. So when we see that a person is upset and sad, then we cheer him up. And that way, Marsha points out, after all, you have an expression in Sanhedrin, when a yid isn't tsar, then the Eibishter, the Shchina Kavyochol, feels tsar. So therefore, so by them cheering him up, then they're causing the Eibishter to also feel, the Shchina to also feel better. Inami, and furthermore, ki chazin and beit tre, the islo tigra, bahadi adodi, when we see two people who are fighting, tarchinan, we work on it, we tell them jokes, ba'abdin alahu shlama, bahadi adodi, and we get them in a good mood, and that way they're able to make peace with one another. And this is also Avo Astronomer, not a Machaber, is one of the things. Peter is saying, but Olam Hazeh, Vakir and Kayim, it's Olam Haba. And therefore, that's why Eliyahu tells him that they are indeed B'nai Olam Haba. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gaula. What is today? Chof Sivan, yeah. The Rebbe talks about despite the fact that there's been this tremendous shturim lately, this was in Tav Shinun Aleph, after we saw the niflois that show that it's the year that Melech Mashiach Nigla Boy with the whole Gulf War and anything, we still see that Rebbe said, we still see that it seems to be very difficult to get people to realize and to actually to imbue them with this realization, with this feeling that we are on the threshold of Yemos Mashiach to the point where people are living within the Yoni Mashiach Agula. So how do we counteract that? Is by learning in Yoni Mashiach HaGola, because Torah has the power, Torah, after all, being Chochmosi Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is higher than the world, has the power to change a person's teva. So therefore, even a person on his own feels Chas V'Shalom outside of Gola, because he hasn't gone out of his inner Golos, through learning Torah in matters of Gola, he gets raised up to a standpoint of Gola, and he starts living within Yoni Gola with a feeling and with a realization and that he ne zeba. Yeah, man. We were talking about the Dalad Rishuyas, so beginning Simon Pei Beis on that subject is that in Rishos HaRabim and in Karmelis, you're not allowed to move anything for Amos, and that means whether you're carrying it, throwing it, handing it to somebody else. You're not even allowed, except under some very limited circumstances, to move something less than four Amos at a time in Rishos HaRabim or in Karmelis. Yeah, that the fact that people were asking the other day, how is it that there are people here in this neighborhood who are doing that? It's a kasha, but nonetheless, it doesn't make it right, of course.